Welcome to the Father's Day. I'm Jesse Lee Peterson. Thank you all so much for being with me. Don't forget, you can support us by going to thefathersday.tv, or you can click in the link description and go to locals.com. Thank you all in advance for your support. I have with me today Adur Ali. He is a veteran, entrepreneur, and currently running for Congress in the U.S. District 12 of Charlotte, North Carolina. Amazing. Adur, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Jesse. I'm honored to be here. It feels amazing to be with you.
Same here, man. It's amazing that you're running for Congress. What made you decide to run for Congress?
Well, two things. One, I looked at this district and I looked at the representation that we've had, and the people of this district have not had working class representation for over a decade. That's the first reason. The second reason is I got calls from friends of mine in the state legislature and people that live here locally and asked me to do it. So, you know, I talked to my family about it, talked to some folks in the party, and we thought it was the right time to take on Alma Adams.
Nice, man. I wish you well with that. And so you are representing the Republican Party, right?
Yes, sir.
Nice. How is that going for you as a Black Republican?
So the interesting thing is people tend to think we're unicorns and that there's not a whole lot of Black Republicans. But the fact of the matter is in North Carolina, we have a very robust Black Republican movement. I had the opportunity to actually chair the NCGOP's Black Conservative Voices Coalition. So the party is really taking Black engagement seriously. We just did a bus tour, Black Voters for Trump. We had a bunch of Black folks show up in support and a lot of Black men show up in support. Now, let's be real, Jesse. There's people with stupid ideas about race on both sides of the aisle. Yeah. So we have come across some people that, you know, oh, his name is Adur. He shouldn't be a Republican. We've come across that. But the way that I've dealt with that is by becoming a leader in the party.
Right on, man. I was going to ask you about your name. Adur Ali. Is that like a Allahu Akbar name?
Kinda.
And so how did you get that name?
So my mom was 14 when she had my twin brother and I, when she was pregnant with my brother and I. My grandfather, who has passed away, was a heroin addict. And while she was pregnant with us, he was getting clean. And, you know, as people tend to get religious as they get clean, he was reading the Bible. And he got to the verse where Jesus said, "Illa, illa, lama sabachthani, my God, why have you forsaken me?" Now, Jesse, that language is called Aramaic. The granddaughter language of that language is Arabic. So my grandfather wanted to give my brother and I names that would be in a language Jesus would recognize should he return in our lifetime. If we became Christians or if we became Muslims, he didn't know. He wanted us to have a proper name. But my name means servant of the Most High God. And as a Christian, I believe that's what I'm doing every single day by running for office and serving my community.
Amazing. So you and your brother, are you identical twins?
Identical twins. We have a platform called the Urban Conservative. We do it together. He does what I do, but he just does that out on Long Island where he lives in New York.
That's amazing, man. And so what's important to you?
Oh, man. So first and foremost, you know, I'm going to be a little selfish in that answer. And that is I want my city, I want my district, I want my state to be the best it could possibly be. I want this country to be the best it could possibly be. I want my children to be proud of me and the things that I accomplish. So that's a little selfish. But from a perspective of running as a candidate, we have to do better with our education system. Our children are graduating high schools functionally illiterate. A lot of your audience, I don't need to rehash what the problem is there. Charlotte, as a major city, only ranks 38 out of 50 for upward economic mobility. So there's a high likelihood that if you're born poor in this city, you're going to stay that way. And as a small business owner, somebody who's a working class guy, I have some ideas about how to fix that. And last but not least, Jesse, the real big thing is prioritizing the safety of our community, and not just by securing the southern border, but ensuring that law enforcement has what they need to keep our streets safe. Yeah. Our homicide rate in Charlotte is out of control right now.
Everywhere,
we need to
man.
Do something about it.
It's everywhere. It's amazing. So you are a Christian, right?
Yes, sir.
And how do you know you're a Christian? What does it mean to be a Christian?
So to me, now I will tell you this, having been baptized and having accepted Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior and loving God with all my body, mind, and soul is how I know that I'm a Christian.
Oh, okay. And do you have perfect peace?
I'm trying. I'm getting there. I'm getting there, and I'll tell you, with the direction our country's going in, sometimes it's difficult to have that peace. But I try to have that peace. I try to put God first, and you know, when I get that angst or I get that anxiety, for lack of a better word, I just remember who's in control.
And being a Christian, why don't you already have perfect peace if you believe in God?
Well, I think, Jesse, the thing is for me, you know, I'm at peace knowing what's going to happen with me when I leave this earth, when this life is done. In that regard, I would say I have perfect peace. But it's a little hard to have perfect peace all around the table, knowing the conditions of the community that I'm in and knowing what's happening here. So I get you. I get where you're going on one side of that, but you know, I still live in Charlotte. I still live in the United States, and we still have people who are very demonic and who want to do very
Wow.
negative things to our country. So that's that. But I, as far as knowing where my soul goes and knowing who's in control, I got perfect peace when it comes to that.
Amazing. And so did you, I know that you, your mother was on drugs, you went through a lot. You and your brother was put up in foster homes for a while and all that stuff. Did you ever forgive your mother for what she did?
For sure. Absolutely.
And
I had to.
did you tell her?
Yes.
And I read that you and your brother lived with your father for a while, and that wasn't good either. Am I right?
That's about right.
And are you able to say what happened with you and your father? The reunion get
So,
along?
yeah, Jesse, look, he took out a lot of anger and a lot of frustration on us physically and emotionally. And so the system came in and took us away from him. And that's how we ended up, you know, growing up separated and in the system.
Yeah.
So, you know, he has chosen to not be a part of our lives, and that's fine, you know. But I chose to live a life with my children, with my sons and daughter, to make sure that they don't treat me or feel that way about me,
Right
and that I
on.
don't feel that way about them.
And did you forgive your father?
Totally forgiven. I ain't mad at him.
Did you tell him that?
Sure did.
What was it like for him to hear that you were not holding anything against him?
Well, I can't put myself in his shoes, but I could basically say is this, is he's cut from a cloth from a generation of men that don't really know how to convey their emotions very well. And so if I'm being honest, it made him a little uneasy. I could tell he was like a little uneasy about it. But I think that the type of person that I've become as a result of not holding on to that frustration and anger has made me a better father and a better family man all around the board.
And so, how did you and your brother come back together? Because you guys were separated for a while, right? How did you
Yeah.
guys find each other again?
So we ended up in a place upstate New York. Shouts out to LaSalle School for Boys. And we ended up there together. So he was on one side of the facility. I was on another side of the facility. My biological mom showed up when we were about 14. And then we decided, after some home visits and getting to know her, that we would go home with her. So we got back together at LaSalle School for Boys and then moved out to Long Island with our mother.
Nice. And so you're married. How many children you have?
Three all together. So son in New York, son here, and a daughter here.
So you said three?
Yes, sir.
Nice. And does your wife obey you?
I'm gonna say yes, but don't tell her I said that. No, listen, yes, I would say yes, because you know the type of household that we have. You know, she understands that there's a head to the household and there's a role for each of us to play. And I'm honored to have someone that would understand that role.
Nice. And so, how do you deal with the hell when it comes out of her? You know, she just ticked about nothing, or you wake up in the morning, you are rested, had a nice sleep, and she already ticked off. How do you deal with the hell when it comes out of her?
That's a good question, and the honest answer is I tend to not, you know, nag or push. When I notice that mood's there, I tend to kind of step out of the way. You know, nobody's gonna have a bright and sunny day every day. So when I see those signs, when you with somebody you know, over two decades, you can kind of sense what's going on. But more often than not, I'll just be like, hey, is there anything I can do? Do you need me to do something? Should I drive, you know, the kids to work or school or whatever the case may be? What can I do to ease it? And then some days there's just get out of the way and don't worry about it and let it work itself out.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. One last thing about that. Do you believe that human beings are in a fallen state?
Oh, I don't believe it. I know it.
And for those who don't know, what does that mean to be in a fallen state and how do you overcome it?
So if in my view, when I say fallen state, I mean falling away from the Father, falling away from God. And what I mean by that is that we've taken God out of the schools. We've taken prayer out of schools. We've taken God out of everything. And I think the way we get back to that is to, one, become godly people again and to put God first in everything that we do. I think a second part of that would be, and I'll make this very short, is I think a lot of us are out of order. And what I mean, Jesse, by out of order is God ordained the individual, the family, the church, and last but not least, the government. And when an individual can't self-regulate, the family should be there to help. And when the family can't help, the church should be there to help. And when the church can't help, the government should be the last line of defense. Yeah. But right now, it's the individual can't self-regulate, so the government comes in. It's not the church. It's not the community. It's not the family. It's the government. So I think we've got to get ourselves back in order as a society, as a culture, and that's how we redeem ourselves from that fallen state.
Nice. And what do you think about God's order of God and Christ, Christ over man, man over woman, and woman over children? What do you think about that order?
That's the right way it should be.
I'm sorry?
That's the way it should be.
Absolutely. That's the only thing that's going to work.
That's it.
Speaking of government in your life, you know about the shooting down in Georgia recently where some kid allegedly went into a school, shot up some people, and now they have arrested not only the kid, but the father. Should the government have arrested the father?
So I don't have all the details, but I do know this, you know, by and large, parents are responsible for the actions of their children. And if this father had anything to do with that young man, you know, perpetrating that heinous act, then by all means, I think law enforcement took the right steps. But I don't have all the details. I don't know everything that went on down there. I do know that the grandfather said some very not nice things about the father and what was going on in that household. So, you know, Georgia law enforcement knows best. If they thought that it was the right step to arrest the father, then I think they should have.
And I understand that you don't know all the details. That makes sense. If he had somehow or another encourage the boy to do it or that type of thing?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, look, there's some pretty sick people in this world, Jesse, and there's no telling what was going on in those people's households. You know, there's one thing that I've learned is you can never underestimate what people will do. So, you know, I pray for the families. I pray that they you know, recover and get healing from that. But if that father had anything to do with pushing that kid to do that, then, you know, he needs to be charged as well.
Yeah. I saw, according to a report, we never know the real story, to be honest. They said that the father bought the gun because that's what they do in the South. And that's how it was when I was growing up there as well. He went to the school, according to a report, because the boy was being bullied and all that. And he was called different names and the boy couldn't handle it. So he tried to get the school to do something about it, but apparently they didn't, according to a report. It seemed as though the father was doing the best that he could do. And if that's the case, that he had nothing to do with the boy shooting up and all that, should the government have arrested him?
No, if they find out that he had nothing to do with it, that's the case. But I think, Jesse, look, I had days at school when I got bullied. I didn't want to go shoot up the school. You know, right. I think that there's a bigger problem here with our young people in the sense of despair and desperation that they have. And it's just an all around sad situation.
Yeah, that's amazing. So the Great White Hope, you know who that is, right?
DJT.
That's right. There's going to be a debate tonight between, and tonight is September 10th, 2024, just for the record. There's going to be this debate between Donald Trump and Kamala Harris. What are you thinking about? Even though we don't know what's going to happen, what do you expect to see tonight?
I expect to see a massive bowl of word salad, as usual, from Kamala Harris.
Yeah.
I expect to see no accountability for the abysmal record that the Biden-Harris administration has had over the last 3 years on the border and the economy and safety. I am hoping and praying that Donald Trump will let her do most of the talking. And I'm hoping and praying that Donald Trump will actually recognize that it's his to lose, you know, to stay calm. But we know Trump is going to do what Trump does.
Trump's going to be Trump.
Yeah, he's going to be Trump. But I'll tell you, Jesse, I think, honestly, this is going to be the most important presidential debate in the history of our country, because we're at a precipice that if we go over this corner with Kamala Harris and the socialist Marxist policy she wants to pursue, that'll be the death of our country.
Yeah, I agree. I'm surprised that anybody vote for Kamala Harris. They've already seen what she can do. She's been there for 4 years now almost. They already know she's not going to do anything good for the country. Are people voting for her just because she's a female, just because she's black and a Democrat?
Yes, yes, and yes. And that is the unfortunate reality of when you have no civics, no real, and I hate to use the word political education, but we're not civically educated in our schools anymore. You ask the average person, who's your county commission? Who's your city councilman? Who's your mayor? Who's your sheriff? Who's your police chief? They don't know. And even in this district here, a lot of people don't know who represents them. So, you know, we've watched what I'm going to call the most manufactured presidential campaign I've ever seen, and probably in our country's history. And for the folks that are voting for her just for her gender, just for her skin color, I went on MSNBC and told them, Jesse, going to Howard don't make you black. And I never, and you probably ain't never seen no black people put no greens in no bathtub. That has never happened nowhere in blackness.
Right. You can tell she didn't know what she was talking about. Ain't no way they would have put the greens in the bathtub. What the?
You don't wash your butt where you put the food is the rule. You know?
Yeah, I saw that in the interview when you said that. That was amazing. It was so true. What did the interviewer think of you once you made that statement?
I don't think she was very happy. They cut a lot of that out. There were some answers that, you know how the media does. They cut out. But one of the things I finished up by saying is that not only does not going to Howard not make you black, going to Howard doesn't make you black. When she had the opportunity to be a benefit to black men, i.e. not keeping them in prison beyond their sentence for cheap labor, i.e. not locking people up for marijuana and then going on the Breakfast Club to laugh about it, she did everything to the opposite. As a matter of fact, people don't realize she actually locked up a black mother for her daughter missing school because the girl had sickle cell anemia. That's not benefit to the black family. That's a detriment to the black family. And that's what Kamala Harris actually stands for.
I was surprised to see you on that panel, knowing that the liberal media don't like for white black people to tell the truth like that. How did you end up on that panel?
I got to give a big shout out to the chairwoman of the Mecklenburg County Republican Party. She called me and said, hey, MSNBC is looking for, mixed race voters. I know you're black and Puerto Rican. Would you like to do it? And I said, I'm going to go. Sure, I'll do it.
Amazing. Nice. I didn't know you're black and Puerto Rican.
Correct. My mom's side of the family is Puerto Rican.
No wonder you look half white.
Hey, there you go. Depending on how bright it is, my skin gets a little lighter.
Yeah, amazing. I want to know, God did not create women to be leaders. Maybe I shouldn't ask you this since you're running, but I will. God didn't create women to be leaders. And in our country, they are pushing men to the back burner. And on both sides, the Democrats, Republicans, the churches, and everybody, and they are pushing men to the back burner and bringing women to the forefront. That's not good for our country. It's not good for the family or anything. What do you think about that, and what should be done about that?
So I think a few things. I think in this country, we've gotten representation and leadership mixed up.
Yeah.
I'm all for, you know, women representing their community. If they can run for office and represent their community and represent the interest of their community, I'm all for women, you know, running and, you know, leading their own businesses and being entrepreneurs and things like that. But I think that there is a type of woman that is not suited for that, i.e. Kamala Harris is not suited. I can't see her sitting down with serious men like Xi Jinping or Vladimir Putin.
Right.
That's not going to work. So, you know, I think that we've got to understand that there's a difference between representation and leadership. And I think that we need to stop looking at our congressional representatives as leaders. These are not leaders. These are representatives. You are there to do the will of the people. And I think that's what's gotten us in trouble as far as our politics and our representation goes.
Could that be turned around? Could that change where men take over again and fall in place where they should be and lead the way? Could that change?
I think so, Jesse. And I think reelecting Donald Trump will be a step in the right direction. I also saw there was recently a story about a bunch of, you know, men on the left that went and got tested and they were surprised to find out they were low testosterone men. I think we've got to get past this idea of, you know, toxic masculinity and all of that, you know, feminist foolishness. And men have to be men again. Men have to be willing to put their foot down and say, here you go and no further. I'm going to lead. This is what we're doing.
Yeah.
But I think we need to also get more men. And I'm a big proponent of taking our retired military veterans and putting them in the classroom and letting men teach our young men how to be men.
Yeah.
So I think that's how we get back, you know, get back to that.
I'm glad to see you running, especially that you are Black, because in the Black community, the women have literally taken over, especially with help from the Democratic Party and all that. And they are representing the men and it's just a mess. So it's nice to see a man standing up and running again, especially a conservative man.
Well, thank you, Jesse. And look, I've not treated my opponent any different than I would treat if she was a male opponent. I'm calling out her failures to properly represent the people of my district. Think about this, Jesse. Somebody who is 78 years old, who survived this, who came up through the civil rights movement, to not want to require proof of citizenship, to allow illegal citizens the right to vote in our country. People on the left say it's not happening, but it's happening in San Francisco.
Yeah.
They're pushing it to happen in D.C. It's happening all over the country. She voted against that. She actually even voted against deporting illegal aliens who assault police officers. This is common sense stuff.
Yeah.
And this is what happens. She, you know, when you have people like this woman representing and not doing the right job.
I was talking to some Black women over the weekend, and they would say, well, if she hasn't done anything, that's fine. She has come a long way in her career, and we should help her in her career. I'm like, that's the dumbest thing I ever heard. She has not done anything. You just think you should help her in a career? And that seemed to be floating around in parts of the Black community. What do you think? What do you say to those people who say we need to help her with her career?
Camilla. I'm going to say, first of all, how much with your career has she helped you is my first question.
I rest my case.
And the reality of it, Jesse, is this. If you've been in government for 20, 30 years, you don't have a shared experience with the everyday person.
Yeah.
You're not even connected. You saw the videos of Kamala. That lady don't know what it's like to walk around a gas station. She don't really. It was so awkward and fake and staged.
Yeah.
You know, these are people who don't have anything vested in the experience that everyday Americans are facing. And that's my question as I'm out on the campaign trail, people, and they're like, we're going to vote blue. I'm like, well, why? All you've gotten for your vote for the last 60 years is higher crime, less money, worse schools, you know, less respect from the Democrat Party does not respect the Black voter. And the proof in that pudding is right after the election, they dump y'all off and then you don't see them again for 2 years.
Yeah. Absolutely, man. I was surprised to hear that the Blacks were told help her with her career, and they fell for it. Some have said yes to that. Should women be preachers?
I don't know if I like that idea. I personally have been uncomfortable every time I've gone somewhere, and it's been I just, my personal preference is I like male preachers. I like getting the word from men. I just it, I don't I don't I'm not gonna say they shouldn't, but it's not my cup of tea.
I totally know they shouldn't, should not, because of God's order, God and Christ, Christ and man over woman, woman over the children, and God would not put a woman ahead of man. As a matter of fact, God said that to the man, because you listen to the woman, you will suffer. And I noticed that every time men listen to women today, they suffer.
I ain't gonna argue that. I'm not gonna argue that one. But yeah, Jesse, I think at least now, and let me just put it this way. When we look at what the church in America has become, right? Let's just say our foundation is our faith, and you take a map of our country and you put the Bible Belt up there. Remember, Jesus said, you'll tell the health of a tree by the fruit that it bears. So when you take a map of the Bible Belt, and on top of that map, you superimpose something called the stroke belt map. Those are the places in the country with the highest incidences of diabetes, heart disease, and obesity. On top of that map, you look at the states with the highest incarceration rates. Just so happens it's the stroke belt and the Bible Belt. Then you take a map of the states with the lowest high school graduation rates and the lowest literacy rates, happens to be those same areas of the country. So something we've been doing in our churches is not producing the fruit that we would call healthy. And I think it may be in large part to what you're talking about.
Absolutely, man. It is. It really is. I want to ask. So you're a conservative now. Have you always been conservative?
No. At least not self-identified that way. I've likely been a conservative this whole time. I just didn't know it. But it took a friend of mine at a Rotary Club meeting to pull me to the side. I was on the Community Development Commission, and he said, "Hey, man, you do realize you're conservative." I'm like, "What are you talking about?" And he goes, "Well, every time I see you're on a tow truck, a lawnmower, a ladder. You work really hard. You go to church. You take care of your family. You served in the military. Dude, you're a conservative." And it took me some time to study the autobiography of Frederick Douglass, and then, really take a deep internal dive and, okay, what is the Democrat Party platform? What is the Republican Party platform? And then I'm like, I don't agree with any of what they're talking about. But for the longest time, Jesse, I was like this. I was like life with the blinders on, work, home, kids, school. I didn't really care about politics until, I got on this Community Development Commission, and I started seeing these people ain't smarter than me. These people aren't any different than me. They just are willing to take the time out and be where they need to be. So I wasn't always conservative, but I recognize that I am now.
Right on, man. What's wrong with the black?
Where you want me to start? Where do you want me to start? Look, here's our problem, and I'm gonna not all, like you say, not all, but most.
Right. Not all, not all, not all, but most
are suffering from one. Our people perish for a lack of knowledge. We could tell you more about the basketball, the football, the baseball. We could tell you more about that stuff. We could tell you more about Jay-Z and Lil Wayne and what the celebrities are doing than we can about what's happening in our communities, one. And the other side of this is I think that we've in large part fell for the rhetoric, the soft bigotry of low expectations from the Democrats. We fell for that. And I think that the welfare state has done a number on our community, and it continues to do a number on our community. But we also have to take into account, Jesse, that people who want to do better do better. And the folks in our community who get the loudest microphones are often the ones that don't want to do better. When I go around and I talk to black people and I'm like, "Do you know who Thomas Sowell is? Do you know who Walter Williams is? Do you have any?" They have no clue. So, for those that want to do better, will do better. But here's an interesting thing, and I've said this in my campaign. In North Carolina, the poverty rate for African Americans is right around 18, 19%. So that means almost 80% of us are doing just fine. And this is this media portraying that all black people are poor, all black people got it bad. And that's, I think, a big part of the problem with black people is we're letting everybody else tell our story and tell how we're doing. And in reality, that ain't the case.
That's amazing. How are you being received out there campaigning now? And you're absolutely right in what you're saying. How are people accepting this? What's the response you're getting?
So we've got some good responses. You know, a lot of people on the left get upset. Mainly, you know, white women are really mad at me. Clearly, you know, you don't know your struggle. You don't know your people. And I'm like, okay, you don't know what I've been through. But I've done a very non-traditional Republican campaign. I've gone to black churches. I've done a smoke shop tour where we've gone around to the different cannabis shops and met people where they are. We go out every weekend and we meet people in the community, and we go to black-owned businesses. Folks are ready for a change in this district, but there is an older black female that does not like what I'm talking about, and that will cuss me out and get mad. And then there's what I call the runaway slave mentality, you know, that people are stuck on that Democrat Party plantation. And they're like, you know, who's going to run against her? What you doing that for? And I'm like, bro, it's 2024. Get off the plantation. Yeah. What has this lady done for you?
Absolutely, man. You are the director, one of the director of the Frederick Douglass Foundation organization, right?
Yes, sir.
Tell the people about the Frederick Douglass organization, and then I have a question about it.
Okay, so the Frederick Douglass Foundation is a right of center public policy and education organization. We promote the ideals of Frederick Douglass around entrepreneurship, education, and sensible regulations. We want to keep the legacy of Frederick Douglass alive. And, you know, I'm sure your listeners know, but if you don't know who Frederick Douglass is, he is a major part of the reason slavery was abolished in this country. But he was also, in his words, a dyed-in-the-wool Republican. And that's what we are about. We are about getting people, moving them over to the Republican Party. And as an organization, we also have a seat on the North Carolina Republican Party's Central Committee. So we are able to take the cares, concerns, and issues of the black community directly, not just to the Republican Party, but also to the legislators in our legislature, to help them advocate and do laws that benefit the black community.
It's amazing the number of black people who are not aware of Frederick Douglass. It's like they've kept him in the background in the same way they did with Walter Williams and other black Republican leadership over time. It's amazing to me how they've been able to keep the blacks from those people.
It is. And I think the more people come to the realization that Frederick Douglass was a Republican, all of the first black U.S. House of Representatives and senators were all Republicans. Yeah. It was the Republican Party that voted for our right to vote, to give us full citizenship, on and on. You know, you all know the spiel. But I think the Republican Party of today is starting to recognize that we have to be willing to walk in that history and be a part of that and be willing to go out and engage. And part of what my work has been able to do is we actually have more black Republicans in party leadership in North Carolina than any other state in the country. And we're really proud of that fact.
Right on. I love the fact that you and Donald Trump go into the black community, you go where they are, and you hear their complaints, whether you agree or not, at least you're there to listen to them. Because in the past, the Republicans have refused to do that, except for Ronald Reagan. They have refused to do that. And I thought it was a big mistake not to go into the communities and listen to the folks.
Well, the one thing that I tell all of my Republican friends, Jesse, is if you stay in the echo chamber, the song never changes.
Yeah, absolutely. What's the difference between Martin Luther King Jr. and Frederick Douglass?
You know, I think the difference is Martin Luther King, if Frederick Douglass was alive at the same time Martin Luther King was alive, I think they'd have shot Frederick Douglass first. It's, I think, what the difference is.
I agree.
And I think that Frederick Douglass was unapologetic.
Yeah.
I think that, and people need to recognize that you don't give the enemy a holiday. You understand what I'm saying? I'm being very delicate about how I say this, because I know they love Martin Luther King, right? I know they love him.
What a mess.
But you have to think about this question, right? You have to put this into perspective. The question becomes, What did we get for all of that? For being able to go to the same store, there was a point, and if anybody studies history, we didn't care if white people had a store.
Sure,
we built our own store.
Yeah.
We didn't care about the white doctor because we just got our own doctor. You know, we talk about these black Wall Streets across the country. So I think that the difference is that Frederick Douglass wanted us to be self-sufficient and wanted us to be a part of the American fabric without having to rely on anybody else. And Martin Luther King wanted people to force acceptance, if that makes sense. And some people would get mad when I say that. But the fact of the matter is, I think we've done more of a detriment, because once that civil rights generation got their big houses, got their big cars, you know, these are our grandparents we're talking about. We're not, our community's not in the conditions it is on their own. So somebody dropped the ball. And I think the difference between the two was one was talking about self-sufficiency and one was talking about becoming more dependent and relying on the system. And I think that's the difference between the two.
That's amazing, man. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And it's unfortunate that once again, the blacks have been miseducated. And they're like into this civil rights movement issue, not knowing that they're being used and controlled by this so-called civil rights leader. You're absolutely right about that.
Well, Jesse, the only other thing, if I might, on that is that we also have to recognize what agendas we got used for. I implore people, go look up Bayard Rustin. Go look up who was using the black nonviolent movement to get their agenda across, and you'd be very surprised to see who it is.
What a mess. I hope you win, man.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate that.
Wow, we need that. I want to ask about racism, then I have to put you on the hot seat here. Does racism exist?
In the hearts of people who believe it does. Outside of that, America is not a racist country. We are not a country that was founded in racism. I don't believe that for a single instance. The concept of race doesn't exist. There's no biological, you know, definition for race that makes any sense. It's a cultural idea. No, man. People have stupid ideas, okay? People don't have the brightest of ideas. Now, if you want to call that racism, sure. But I think discrimination exists, but racism, nah.
Absolutely. And even God said that we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against spirits and principalities and wickedness, right? In high places.
Yes, sir.
And so our battle is not a physical battle, it's a spiritual battle. There are those who are on the side of good, and there are those who are on the side of evil, and they clash with one another because evil want to win and good want to win. And instead of calling it what it is, they say, oh, it's racism, it's sexism, it's some type of ism, when it's really not ism, it's a spiritual issue.
There you go. Love it.
And your own family member, if they're not on the side of good, and you are, they can turn against you as well. It doesn't matter. It's because it is a spiritual battle. I'm glad you're out there saying that, man. That's amazing.
Yes, sir.
And so tell the people why they should vote for you.
Well, two reasons. One, because it's time the people of Charlotte had a representative that is actually going to listen, be present, and has skin in the game in this district. My family is from here. My children are born and raised in this community. I live and work here, number one. Number two, I'm running against a career politician who has been in Congress for a decade and in government over 35 years. I'm not trying to sound ageist, but this woman is 78 years old and she has no idea what the common folk are going through these days.
Yeah.
If you want somebody that knows what it's like to have to run a business, that's working hard to put food on the table, and that's willing to have a term limit, which is something that I've signed up on, then I'm your guy. I'm running to do three things. I do not have on the rose color glasses, Jesse, of going to D.C. and changing D.C., but I can change what's happening in my district, and I want to focus on improving our early childhood education, our upward economic mobility, and making sure that we're keeping our families safe here in Charlotte.
So will you be debating this woman?
She has never debated a congressional opponent.
Wow.
I've been calling her out. She refuses to debate a congressional opponent. And I think that's because she does not want to be held to task for her voting record. I think that she feels entitled to the seat. And I've had one interaction with her where she was very rude. And so, you know, at the end of the day, I will tell people, if she's not willing to debate, that's because she doesn't want to be held to task for her record, and she doesn't think she owes it to the people of this district to put the contest of ideas in front of them.
And the fact that she doesn't want to debate, it shows that she's afraid of you anyway. She doesn't want the voters to see both sides, because if she thought she was right, she would be willing to debate you.
Correct. That's what I think.
What a mess. So,
a mess, Jesse.
What is a man?
Whew, okay. A man, first of all, biologically, is a male human being that is fully grown, somebody that loves their family, that loves God, loves their community, is going to do the right thing.
Nice. I got to put you on the hot seat. So I got to heat this up, and I need you to answer these questions as quickly as possible.
Let's go.
The hot seat.
Should a man ever tell a woman his problems?
No.
Is the earth flat or round?
It's round.
Do we need more white babies?
We need more babies, period. So, yes.
Has anyone ever told Harpo not to beat you?
No.
True or false, abortion is worse than slavery?
True.
Have you ever seen a ghost?
No.
Are you a nationalist?
Maybe. Depending on how we define it, maybe.
What is love?
Love is what comes from God and what you're able to give to your family.
Did Big Mama Michelle Obama eat up all the ribs?
Most likely.
Is it wrong for a black man to love the Confederate flag?
No.
Have you ever told anyone how the cow ate the cabbage?
No. No.
True or false? No, I won't ask that. Does the bear shit in the woods?
Sure do, and wipe his butt with a rabbit.
Do you love white people?
Yes, I do.
Did you have fun?
I had a blast, brother. I had a blast.
Amazing, man. I really, really wish you well, man, in this campaign. How's it going so far?
So far, so good. We're staying busy. Our website is aliforcongress.com, aliforcongress.com. We are doing really good. Just staying busy, man, going to where the people are, brother. So an honor. I'm humbled. I'm honored. I told my brother I was going to be on your show. He was like, snap a screenshot. So I'm going to do that right now.
Amazing. Okay. Are you getting support from the Republican representative in your area there?
I am. I have been endorsed by the Speaker of the North Carolina House and the next congressman from the 14th District. I've been endorsed by Colonel Lori Bookout, who is running up in the 1st District. Our Senate Majority Leader, Paul Newton, and so many other folks in the legislature have come out to endorse and support me. So, yes, we've gotten broad and wonderful support from the GOP.
Right on, man. Well, I really, really, really wish you well, and thank you for taking on the hot seat. And tell the folks how, again, they can help you, your website, whatever you want to put out there.
All right. First of all, Jesse, thank you for the opportunity. Honored, my brother, to be here. Folks, you can go to Ali for Congress. That is aliforcongress.com. We're asking as many people as we can to drop $20.24 on the campaign. We have a robust plan to reach every single voter in this district and to get our word out. So, again, aliforcongress.com. Say a prayer. Make a pledge. And thank you for rocking here on the Fallen State.
Right on. You want to take the picture right now?
Sure. Hold on.
Amazing.
Hold on. Shift command. Got it. Thank you, Brother Jesse. Appreciate you.
You're welcome. And thanks again for coming on And thank you all for tuning in. I absolutely appreciate it. Don't forget to go to thefatherstate.tv/donate or click this link in the description there and go to locals.com to support us. Like, follow, ring the bell, check out the merch, and do all the social media stuff y'all need to do. And if you'd like to see someone else on the show, The Father State, let us know. Contact my producer at producer@thefatherstate.tv. All right. Thank you, man. I hope that you get a chance to debate that woman. If you do, let me know. I would love to see that.
I'll let you know, Jesse. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. And thank you all for tuning in. I absolutely appreciate it. Amazing.